Hi, this is Nancy Gift and Joan Polly. We're here with People, Profit, and Planet. We're sort of here, at least.
Yes.
Because it's, well, Joan has told me that she's not a morning person, which you're so truthful. I never actually knew that. But, you know, yeah. We all have our times.
Yeah,
Not our best. Anyway, you're listening, and this is the week before Thanksgiving. So
yep.
If we have any listeners at all, that means that somebody is really desperate to get away from their families for a few minutes, or they just haven't even gotten there yet.
Right.
So we thought we'd spend a little time this week talking about food and maybe even forgiveness, which is a big part of sustainability in the big picture.
Totally.
So food, Thanksgiving food, you know, there's the turkey and the cranberries mm-hmm. and the potatoes,
mm-hmm.
and those turkeys are really pesky critters to raise.
Yeah.
You know, one of my favorite book chapters about turkeys is this chapter from Barbara Kingsolver's Animal Vegetable Miracle.
Yes.
And she's writing about raising the heirloom turkeys who, when they're fat, they can actually still stand up.
Whoa.
And they are so strong that they can actually breed all by themselves without artificially being inseminated.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Who
would have thought? I mean, a turkey that can do that all by itself. That knows what to do.
Wow.
And they're actually physically capable of accomplishing
my goodness.
The job. So,
wow.
Yeah.
We just put a lot of people out of work.
Yep, over turkey sex.
Yes.
Right. So there's that chapter. And I was telling Joan earlier, I have always liked to have that as a reading in my classes right before Thanksgiving. And then the students are like, but my mom is never mm-hmm. going to serve this kind of
right.
turkey, or my family's not going to buy this. And of course, it's harder to afford it.
Sure. So, sure.
Yeah.
Right. Right. You know, I'm the same way. It's, you know, you have choices, and as long as you're making your choices mindfully, mm-hmm. For example, like Kroger now has their Simple Truth line,
right?
And that's an organic line that
right.
actually is more in line with a non-organic choice in terms of cost,
right?
So, you know, I think with sustainability, when you look at it from strictly a purist standpoint,
mm-hmm.
you know, we all have a footprint.
Right.
I think it's just being mindful of that footprint. So if we can't necessarily look at a free range option, then, you know, perhaps we talk to family and say, hey,
right.
you know, Kroger, and maybe
right.
even Walmart is getting into the game. There was
yeah.
actually on the cover of Time not
uh-huh.
too long ago. This very issue around a movement towards organic foods in the fast food market industry.
Oh, interesting. Right.
And it has reached a revenue tipping point
nice.
Where McDonald's and Taco Bell and some of these other people are perking up and going, hey, wait a minute.
We need to at least pay
yeah.
attention to what's going on.
Right, and make
right.
some changes. And so it's always such a relief to me when I go to the store and I have options that are in alignment with my value system.
Right.
But when they're not and you have to get something, then,
right.
you know, you mindfully go, okay, I'm making a
right.
choice here.
Right.
But, yeah, at the top when you were talking about forgiveness, I'm a big proponent of something I call sustainable you, Y-O-U.
Uh-huh.
And you could spend a tremendous amount of your energy and effort trying to be perfect when it comes to sustainability and just be exhausted and really have nothing left over for yourself. So
yes.
being kind with yourself helps you be more kind with others,
right.
I think. And believe it or not, as you know, Nancy, but a lot of folks don't,
right.
you know, kindness is a form of sustainability.
It is, because if you're not kind to people, then they're going to end up spending money going to counselors. They're going to spend time not being
right.
useful. I mean,
right.
it has all kinds of longer-term effects.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. I'm going to have my class this afternoon working. And by the way, we're not recording this on the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, so I do have class
yeah.
this afternoon, and
yeah.
I'm going to have them looking at the roots of the Syrian refugee crisis.
Oh,
because that's,
wow.
you know, a lot of unsustainable things happening
yes.
in part because there was a serious lack of kindness and sort of
absolutely
just civilized behavior going
right.
on in a lot of other parts of the world.
So, exactly.
Anyway, yeah, I think remembering the kindness first as part of a good piece of sustainability before Thanksgiving is
absolutely
a really important one.
And start with kindness to yourself. Mm-hmm. Give yourself a break. You know, do the best you can.
If you didn't already get your Simple Truth turkey, then don't beat yourself up.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. And then you'll have, I think you're more available to the people around the table rather than focusing on the lack of something you didn't do or what's wrong or we shouldn't be doing this. I've never known anything to get moved on the needle through negativity.
Right.
You know, it's typically through a vision or something that we want to see that's different from where we are.
The positive. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It'll move us towards something we want rather than away from something that we feel shamed about.
Right.
So.
So I think it's interesting how much is right about Thanksgiving, regardless of where the turkey or the cranberries were purchased or whether those cranberries are organic or whatever. But, for one, I remember hearing not too long ago, and maybe you actually know more about this because I know your son's a chef, but that cooking for 15 is about the most energy efficient. So that we're used to thinking of family meals as being very energy efficient, but really there's a lot of preparation and that the serving more people when you're cooking that, you know, at 15 you can still probably use one oven and one kitchen, but you get more people involved. And, so I think it's interesting that Thanksgiving is fundamentally a sustainable-sized crowd. Often, you know,
that's great.
That you need more people to make it a more sustainable feast.
Right.
And then, of course, it's this holiday that all the stores like to skip over because they can't figure out how to sell us anything but food.
Isn't that something?
It's sort of amusing and at the same time not that they just ignore Thanksgiving because they don't know what to do with it.
Yeah. Thanksgiving actually is my favorite. That and I think Easter time because it really is all about time. Spending time together and sharing time around the table.
Family time.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Our family and adopted family.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Family and in its expanded definition for whatever that looks like.
Yeah. The people who are kind to you.
Exactly.
And who don't make you feel ashamed.
Exactly. Exactly. So, yeah, I think I hadn't thought about the energy aspect of it's a very efficient holiday.
At least the day itself, regardless of the travel that it might have taken to get there, which is interesting.
Yeah. Right, right. So, well, and there's always, carbon offset. If you just Google carbon offset.
Travel can be an easy one to fix.
Yeah, you can see what your – the EPA actually has a really good carbon footprint calculator.
Okay.
Where you can just Google carbon individual or personal carbon footprint EPA.
Okay.
And it's fascinating to plug in what your own personal carbon footprint is.
Okay.
Cuz you know, sustainability comes at things at a global level, at a policy level.
Mhm.
But we forget sometimes that we have our own individual responsibility.
Right.
And if we feel strongly about something, then there are ways to be able to to do it. So if we all looked at the travel that we're doing, and there's ways to offset that.
Right.
But if you don't, that's okay too.
Right.
You know, you can make choices around,
your choices are about the food. I'm quite sure, for example, that my sister and brother-in-law would never do offsets.
Right.
But my sister-in-law is a strict vegan, so she will make sure that we have some sort of really good acorn squash dish at the center of the table, as well as the turkey. And I always learn something about what kinds of things are possible when I cook with my sister-in-law.
There you go. So,
fortunately, she's a really good cook, so if she were cooking for me all the time, maybe I could be vegan, too, but she doesn't.
She doesn't.
So I'm not.
I hear you.
I really like that college bacon, which I think would be really nice on Thanksgiving, too.
I know. Well, honestly, I think of my daughter who's 29, and, growing up, I used to have to sneak the tofu sloppy joes, I wouldn't let them in the kitchen.
Yeah.
I'm not vegan or vegetarian, either one. But I try to eat healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And so she has been rolling her eyes at me my whole life about the way I eat.
That's what our daughters do.
Exactly.
Yes.
And it is amazing now because she actually asked me to go to the grocery store with her and help her choose food because she's pregnant. She's going to have a baby.
And she wants to think about it differently.
Right, right. Yeah. And so that whole generation now, it's kind of amusing to me because I've been thinking about eating organically since the 70s.
Right.
When pretty much all you could get was sawdust.
Yes. Yes.
You know, it was
yeah.
awful stuff.
No.
But now it is truly hit mainstream. So,
yeah.
You know, it's interesting.
Yeah, I've watched Good Foods Co-op in Lexington grow through that time. It was this place where my dad took me every so often, and it was a store about the size of this recording studio.
And
it had, like, bins of white flour and wheat flour.
Yes.
And the produce it had was so nasty looking.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sure it tasted good.
Yeah.
And later in the 80s, I started buying it, and it was still... I thought at that time, I was studying agriculture, and I thought that the barrier to buying organic food was always going to be that it would have more blemishes.
Oh, wow.
And of course, now you'd never know.
Right.
That you can't look at that apple and tell. I mean, maybe some people could lick the apple and tell, but I usually can't. So it's amazing. And I've kind of wondered what happened to all those bad apples that, I mean, obviously the organic farmers still have some bad apples.
Well, you know, and Shelby Wheeler, who's our sustainable foods coordinator, working with me this year.
And planning the Dandelion Festival April 16th.
Exactly. Thank you. She has connected with an organization called Glean, which a lot of those blemished type things are now gleaned, and farmers donate them to the food banks.
Right.
And so a lot of those. And then I know Jessa at the farm, I loved it when she had the ugly fruit and
the ugly
vegetable
fruit sale,
which I thought was great.
Yeah.
But I think there is a greater consciousness of the fact that a lot of food goes to waste.
Yeah.
Just even here on campus, last year we just did an infographic, and I'll do a little plug. Alejandro he's our web and graphic designer for the office labor position.
Oh, yeah, I saw that infographic you were showing Derek.
We posted it on our Facebook page, so you can go see it. But one of the things we measured is based on the amount of food we composted, which is pre-consumer, which is meaning in the prep part, because 100% of the food isn't used. And then post-consumer, what
carrot
we leave.
Carrot tops and that like.
Exactly.
Versus the things you leave on your plate.
Precisely. Mm-hmm. Thank you. We composted enough to feed 81 adults for a year.
Wow.
It's a lot.
That is a lot.
Yeah. So we want to, I mean, it's great that we compost. That's awesome because many, many universities and colleges don't even have the option to compost. It goes in the landfill.
Well, and we have the land, so it's not expensive for us to compost also.
Precisely.
Whereas I know my last place in Pittsburgh, which I'm not going to give the credit of advertising their name, but they wanted to do composting, but they had to pay to have it done in a special facility because it was post-consumer waste, and they didn't, you know, there were concerns about pests and that kind of thing. And they, of course, didn't have the land because they were in the city. So we're really blessed. You know, and I don't use that word lightly.
Yes,
to be able to compost here and to be able to do it so well.
Exactly. However, because we're Berea, we want to take it to the next step and see if we can shift that food from composting into
make sure
another
it gets
source, make sure it gets eaten, because enough to feed 81 people for a year, adults for a year.
And when you think about the population of Hungary and Berea, that's actually a pretty good portion
it
of that
is.
Population.
It totally is
doing it well.
Right.
I know that the school they're working on that because my daughter, my older daughter, came home and she's doing. I couldn't remember the organization, but I know that she was gathering food. Canned food at that time, but I think that she also brought home a thing about Kentucky Glean. So
wonderful.
It's not just hitting at the college level.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. It's nice that we have the partnership with the school.
Exactly. So. Yeah, because they're really, I mean, we have an abundance of food. It's the systems that we need to dial into to see about reallocating where we can make a difference rather than just going to our landfills, which is insane.
It is.
To think about.
Right.
So,
and so nasty, too. I mean, my spouse, the easiest thing about getting him onto composting is he handles the family trash.
Mm.
And, of course, for him, it's so much nicer to handle the family trash when there's no food in it. And then, you know, like if the dogs break into the trash, which does happen sometimes.
Right.
Well, it's just packages.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, I'd rather it be
have
nothing.
Have
some paper, dog. Chew away. Nothing really too goody-goody.
Yeah, so yeah.
It's a good, it helps out. It's not necessarily super pleasant to do, but we've not really had any odor issues with compost in the house. And I know a lot of people worry about like keeping it on the counter, or some people keep it in the freezer or the fridge. But
right. No, we haven't either.
Ways to do it.
Yeah. So tell me, Nancy.
Yeah.
How did we do? And you, I may be asking you a question that, that you don't know, but how did we go from the original Thanksgiving?
Right.
To today.
Boy, it's a funny thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Let's focus on the turkeys. At what point? I mean, I understand the industrialization around land planning, because that's where I came from. But when did we start to industrialize our food?
I think that was really starting in the 40s and 50s as a big movement. But actually, one of the precursors to that, oddly enough, which we think of as all good, was refrigerators.
Mm.
Because once we started having refrigeration on a larger scale, it was conceivable to buy your meat in advance for the whole week. Whereas prior to that, you would have gone to the butcher the day you were going to cook something,
or
at most the day before, and you would have bought that day's meat. So refrigeration, you know, it's its own evil, of course, in terms of energy use, but it's also such a convenience for us, you know, to not have everything go bad.
Right.
Refrigeration, which I think was in the teens or 20s, when refrigerators first started being introduced into the home.
Right.
And then that kind of slowly changed grocery shopping.
Huh.
So grocery shopping no longer was a daily activity. And so, and you might even argue that that change toward refrigerators changed cities, because you're not going to go to the grocery daily if you live out in a suburb.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But if you have a refrigerator and you can stock that refrigerator, which, you know, I go once a week and it's this big thing. One time I went and the credit card company stopped it because they're like, you can't be buying any groceries. And I called them and I'm like, I am so buying this many groceries. So you're just going to let me.
Right.
And they did.
But, yeah.
You know, you can't imagine that kind of, we wouldn't have stocked. And then you had to have the vehicle to haul it.
Right.
So some of the things that we don't think about contributing to our food industrialization, which are real conveniences,
yes.
So refrigeration and cars.
Wow.
Enabled us to start bulking.
Uh-huh.
And then once you start bulking, you don't see the butcher. You don't know where that turkey came from. You don't see the turkey live or hanging by its feet the way you would in a lot of European or other world markets today. So you don't see the animal.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've just got a whole different mindset about shopping. So so the technology took place in the 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think the real changes in farming followed. Mm-hmm. And the changes in farming came with pesticides, increased use of antibiotics, because once you start raising those turkeys in groups, then you start having to use the antibiotics for them.
Right.
You also have to have feed that's more transportable instead of the turkey feeding mostly itself, and then you supplement it with grain, like our chickens. You know, I move them to a fresh patch of grass every day, and they're very quick to enjoy that.
Yeah.
You know, but then they get some grain as well. But that model is not as needed if people aren't looking.
Right.
And I think it's really interesting to try to remember that women were relieved to not have to pay attention to all of that. They were relieved to not walk themselves to the grocery every day. They were relieved to be able to cook in a different volume or, you know, with different information, not five different stores, the baker and the butcher and and the fruit and vegetable person. So I think it's it's a big cultural change that happened in a lot of different ways.
Right.
My aunt, an anthropology professor, I've not got the word right. Anyway, she worked sociology, and she was looking at dental care and that kind of thing, but she did a family cookbook with my grandmother's and great-grandmother's and great-great-grandmother's recipes and dated them. But she also couldn't resist having a fairly long introduction where she talked about the changes in our food system. And so it's interesting because some of the recipes are like very early canned food recipes.
Yeah.
And they're funny because there are these combinations of like 10 different canned foods.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, anything from olives and tomatoes to, you know, whatever. And it's kind of nasty and high salt. And at the same time, like you can see that somebody was excited about that because they wrote it down and it got across two or three generations.
Wow.
So I find it just amazing.
It is.
Thinking about that process.
Yeah. Which I think always brings me back to the word mindfulness.
Yes.
Because we have all of these conveniences, which are great. I don't want to give up my refrigerator.
Well, and forgiveness, too. So forgiving those, you know, forgiving those women, you know, we might think that they were making some horrible choices by stopping meeting their farmers, by, you know, no longer going to farmers markets, but they were busy and they had reasons.
Right.
And they actually had loving reasons in many cases why they were doing what they were doing. So, you know, whenever we meet our older family members at holidays and we get stuck with them for a couple of days, we have to remember that their world wasn't quite the same.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I don't ever intend to forgive any family members for bigotry necessarily, but at the same time, if it's about food and trying to understand, I think we have to work together.
Right, right. And what was progress at the time?
Right.
You know, so it's contextual.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I'm happy that we're it's starting to really reach a tipping point, I believe. If it's on the cover of Time magazine, that organic and local has reached a revenue share, that McDonald's and Taco Bell are starting to think about doing things differently, then we got something going on.
Well, and it's actually kind of a neat moment with respect to the mindfulness you mentioned, because at this moment we have all kinds of choices.
Yeah, exactly.
And so we really can make these choices mindfully, and we almost have to because the choices are all in front of us. So you've got to think, well, is it more important to me to eat the turkey that my grandmother just prepared or to have a little protest about it because it wasn't a free-range organic turkey?
Right.
Well, you know, you can sit and think about that for a bit. But we're at a moment when maybe we have too many choices about food.
Yeah, I think so.
But at least we can start trying to be mindful of the choices we're making.
Exactly. Right.
When we're making them, when we're not.
Right. Yeah. Which I think is the fundamental, actually, this fundamental building block to sustainability.
Yeah.
And, you know, most folks think about sustainability, recycling and energy, which are hugely important.
Right.
But the building block is around choice, and choice is around being mindful.
Right.
Of that. And I think it makes for a better everything in life. You know, if you're conscious, especially this time of year when we're getting into the holiday season, and
it's really interesting that we have Thanksgiving and then the holiday of excess.
Exactly,
it's kind of a funny.
Exactly.
You know, you spend 11 months, and then you get to this point where you can feel thankful, and then you get to Christmas, and I don't know how much thankful there often is at Christmas.
Right.
And I'm not even, you know, I like to remember that Christmas is also a pagan holiday of the longest night of the year, the birth of the new sun, S-U-N. And so I like thinking about all that. But even so, you know, we have transformed it into this holiday of amazing sort of gluttony at some level.
Right, right.
And right after Thanksgiving.
I know, it's amazing. And that, you know, and that's where we add more to the plates, many, many busy plates already. So, I know, that's, everyone says, oh, you know, take care of yourself during the holidays.
Right.
But you really do. And you have to decide.
And you have to.
Yeah, you have to. Nobody's going to do it for you. And I think also being aware of how you replenish yourself, you know.
Yes.
If that means
what's healing.
Yeah,
that one of my favorite family traditions is that at some point on Thanksgiving Day, you know, you're all cooped up and you're cooking and all that. But it's before or after meal, depending on, you know, who we're eating with and whether that's during the daytime or not, but going for a hike sometime on Thanksgiving Day.
Yeah.
And, of course, there's the post-Thanksgiving meal hike when you sort of waddle through the woods, groaning slightly with every hillside. Or there's the pre-Thanksgiving walk where you're still feeling virtuous.
Right.
And you have a nice walk, and then you sit down to meal, and you feel like you earned it.
Exactly.
You know, they both have their perks.
Yes.
But that's one of my favorite Thanksgiving traditions. And it's that getting outside and just enjoying nature, because you know you're going to be back in company in just a minute.
Right.
And but for taking that moment, your whole job is to take a deep breath.
Yeah.
And I had those walks with my grandfather, and had them with friends grad school. And I'm guessing the walks with friends in grad school had more drinks involved than the ones with grandfather.
Iced tea.
Of course,
iced
it was
tea.
Lots of iced tea.
Yes.
Yeah.
Of course.
Something. Maybe Long Island.
Okay. There we go. Yeah.
Anyway, but yeah, those are good holidays, and those walks are really nice.
Yeah.
Do you know, and I it would be really nice if people didn't feel guilty about the travel for Thanksgiving, but did avoid Black Friday.
Yes, exactly. I saw a commercial last night for a retailer that's not going to be open for Thanksgiving Day. And
sure it's not a grocery store.
It's not a grocery store. It's a retail store. But I thought, well, you know, that's celebrating a decision.
That's a start.
Yeah, that they've made, and, you know, that sets them out of the pack. And
boy, and talk about something historical, because, of course, historically, to be open on Thanksgiving Day would have been kind of unthinkable.
Right.
So,
yeah.
That's a funny one. For a second, I thought you were saying they were going to be closed on Black Friday, which is a different beast.
That's another day.
Yes.
No, just on Thanksgiving, they're celebrating the fact that they are not going to be open. And that's kind of a commentary on how mindful we do have to be.
Yes.
Because every choice is imaginable, is available to us here in the United States 24/7.
It is amazing.
So we are incredibly fortunate to live here in a place that we have access to pretty much everything we need.
Yeah.
So it puts a greater burden on being aware and conscious and educate yourself and be kind to yourself at the same time.
Yes. Be kind to yourself for every bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's hard to emphasize that enough.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, and I know for some of us that going into Thanksgiving is really exciting. And for some of us, it is, oh boy, I have to spend Thanksgiving with old drunk, you know, obnoxious uncle, whatever.
Right.
I think it's really good to keep in mind that, first of all, the mindfulness can also invite kind of a sense of humor about the perspective, which is always what I like in a Thanksgiving movie, is that kind of, we're all going to get in here and fight about this, and it's going to be funny.
Yes,
and
exactly.
That would be nice.
Yeah.
Sometimes at Thanksgiving, I try to pretend that it's actually not my family. I'm visiting someone else's family.
Right.
And this is who they are.
Well, and the other thing, too, is there are a lot of people that don't have family to spend for Thanksgiving. And so you can be your own best company on that day. And
either deliberately or not.
Exactly.
I mean, because you have to. But enjoying your own best company.
Exactly.
That's really good.
Yeah. And again, being kind to yourself. And, you know, if it's more enjoyable to open up a can of soup.
Yes.
And sit with yourself
on your porch, or
and enjoy your own company. Or if you want to go full force and do a full meal, I think it's actually each of us taking responsibility for how we respond to whatever our Thanksgiving might look like.
Right,
you know, that day.
Try to be glad of the health or company or whatever you've brought to that day.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, that's a really good place for us to send you all off on the next week.
Yes.
We hope you enjoy your Thanksgiving holiday.
Right.
This is Joan Pauley and Nancy Gift on WBER with People, Profit, and Planet.
Take
care. Have a good one.